Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody, in this call. Welcome to the financial results of the first half of 2021 of the GFT Group. I hope you all have the presentation available. We're sharing it in the webcast. It's available in our investor relations section on our website, and I will now flip through. I know there's a lot going on today. Anyway, it's summertime, so let's be efficient. Slide number two, which sums it all up. GFT rising fast on digitization trends. This is what we're seeing right now. We have already updated our guidance on the 20th of July. You probably have seen it. The guidance for the full year was out already for two, three weeks. Now we come with the actuals of the first half, and we do see that catch-up effects on top of already heavy digitization trends have boosted our revenue. We're up 18% versus the first half of last year. While comparing to the first half of 2020 is a mixed bag. First quarter was still without COVID, and the second quarter was already COVID impacted, so comparing to that time period is a bit weird. Order backlog indicates a strong second half. This is why we were able to increase our guidance. Our utilization is significantly above the prior year. We will see that later. EBT even has quadrupled. Operating cash flow, cash position overall on a high level, and we have seen strong employee growth to accompany our revenue growth. Let's go to slide number three and look at the table. As you can see, the revenue growth of 18% led to a revenue of 261.6 million euros. The order backlog is above prior year, 22%, 217 million euros, and we have a strong increase in EBITDA of 56% to nearly 29 million. Sorry, EBITDA adjusted I'm looking at. Take into account, and we show it on the right side in the smaller bullet points, that the previous year included a lot of exceptional items like the restructuring costs, which are now far lower, and the underutilization, which is now not present anymore. On the FX side, we had a bit more problems and negative effects this year compared to the first half of last year. Looking at all other earnings numbers, we're up by more than 100%. EBT quadrupled. Margin EBT-wise at 6.4%, of course, significantly higher than last year. Tax ratio, I'll come back to that, is 27%. Let's move to slide number four and look at the diversification inside the GFT Group. Let's look at the left block first. Our broad client diversification is ongoing. The client group with more than 50 million euros is only one client, right? It is the Deutsche Bank account inside GFT, and it has heavily reduced from 22%-17% of our overall revenue. Inside DB only declined by 8%, but as everything else was growing quite fast, decrease in the share reduced to 17%. The group of clients with more than 10 million euros is heavily increasing. Here we saw the pickup effects. These are big clients, and they have big pickup effects of investments not done in the year 2020, and therefore the share rose to 36%. At the same time, the next block in the middle, the clients between 5 million and 10 million euros, is stable at 15%, which means it was growing by roughly 15, 16, 17 percentage points, but the share is 15% unchanged. The next smaller group of clients between 1 million and 5 million reduced to 22%. We do see that the strong pickup in demand of the clients above 10 million was hurting the smaller ones, because even this client group that now stands for 22% of our revenue was growing by 4%, but it looks like a reduction as share of overall revenue. The pipeline of clients, very small clients, is stable at 10%. Now let's look at the right side. All sectors have seen nominal growth in the first half year. The banking sector by 13%, but the share of the overall revenue was decreasing to 73% because all other industries were growing faster. The insurance part was growing by 45%. It now stands for 17% of GFT overall, and industry and others was growing by 23%, which in a rounded view, right, looks like it is still at 10% of overall GFT revenues. Let's move forward, slide number five, and look at the revenue and EBITDA numbers by quarters. Let's focus on the comparison of Q2 versus Q1 first. We have seen quarter-over-quarter growth of 11%. That is faster than the quarter before. When we compare Q1 to Q4, there the growth was only 5%. So we have seen a pickup in the second quarter. Earnings improvement also follows higher revenue contribution. On the right side, visible that we have an ongoing positive trend. When we compare to the second quarter of 2020, so the COVID quarter, growth is 27%, and of course, EBITDA is heavily improving because we had a lot of one-offs in the second quarter of 2020. Therefore, probably not, it doesn't make much sense to really compare to that quarter. And so when we look at the first half year numbers on the slides to come, it's probably more helpful. Therefore, let's move forward to slide number 6 and start with the revenue by segment breakdown. Obviously, Americas and UK had an unbroken growth trend. We had some currency headwinds of minus 6%, but organic growth stood at 38%. And, well, we kind of listed all countries in that business segment as growth countries. Brazil, US, Hong Kong, UK, and Canada. And we will see later the detailed numbers coming from those markets. Continental Europe, good development in Italy and Switzerland, and it is overcompensating a decrease with top two clients, Deutsche Bank, in Spain. And therefore, the saldo is a plus of 6% organic growth in continental Europe. Now, let's dig, as usual, one step deeper and divide it into the top two clients and the other clients. And when we look at the total group, we do see that the client concentration has reduced to 17% of the top two clients. But as I always say, Barclays is no longer really relevant, so this is mainly Deutsche Bank impact. But it's only a reduction of 8% in the first half year. So this is a slowdown versus the previous year. So we saw Deutsche Bank decline usually by 20%. So we do see a stabilization in the Deutsche Bank account. The decrease comes from both markets, UK, Americas, and Spain, especially on the continental European side. When we look at all other clients, we see that they have grown by 26% in the first half versus previous year, of which most of the growth came in Americas, UK, and APAC. So a very strong development. And when we look at our full year guidance, we will see that Deutsche Bank will probably bring in the same revenue again in the second half year, so another 45.5 million, leading to 91 million. So for the full year, we expect the top two clients to only decline by 5%. And again, this compares to more than 20% reduction over the last 4 years, clearly a signal that Deutsche Bank is stabilizing. All other clients will grow by 31% organically in 2021. Moving forward, slide number 8, we're now looking at the same picture, segments, but this time earnings, and I'm focusing on EBITDA adjusted. In Americas, UK, and APAC, we saw that the revenue increase led to higher earnings contribution and utilization. So here, a good improvement, while in continental Europe, we see a strong rebound. People are very utilized this year, and we no longer have those restructuring effects. And they are now paying off what we did last year. Therefore, hard to compare continental Europe because most of the restructuring in 2020 happened in the first half in continental Europe. Let's add the other segment. The other segment has higher non-allocated overhead costs, mainly IT costs we are keeping in the holding and not charging, especially to Brazil because of very high tax burdens if we do that. And second, a higher variable share and bonus-based compensation. Therefore, higher costs on the others segment. Overall, when we exclude all exceptional positive and negative effects, the margin has not changed much year over year. If you exclude all non-operational exceptional effects. And as we always said, 2021 is about growth. It's not about margin. Now that we do see a pickup in nominal earnings, it's mainly because of the strong growth. On the margin side, we're seeing high onboarding costs for the people we're hiring, recruiting costs. And for sure, we will see later, we have more freelancers on board than in previous years, and they are not as cost efficient as our own employees. And therefore, this strong growth is not easily giving us a higher margin, but it is giving us more EBITDA anyway. Let's move at slide number 9 and look at the revenue by markets. As promised, There are only two countries in negative, which is Spain, and this is only due to the Deutsche Bank reductions in that market, and it's Mexico. In Mexico, we have some local sales challenges going for local clients. All other markets are increasing, with Canada and Brazil standing out with tremendous growth rates. We also see that Switzerland has come back to growth, and Hong Kong and other markets are also growing steeply. Let's move forward, slide number 10, 30 biggest clients in the first half year. Well, you know all the names, not much change quarter over quarter. And the ones with the box around them were not in the list in the first half of 2020. So when we look at those, it's Crédit Agricole, but in Italy. We do see Custodigit on the left side, Swiss client. We see HarbourVest, a U.S. client. And then we see the London Stock Exchange, well, of course, a UK client. So a mixed bag for new clients from different markets. In insurance, we see Beneva, which is a new name, but it is just a renaming after a merger. We used to show La Capitale, a big Canadian insurance company here. It's now called Beneva. And WSIB is also new to the list compared to last year. And Google is back on the list. It wasn't in the top 30 in the year 2020, but now again, we're working for Google direct or through Google more than in the year before. Let's move forward. Slide number 11, profit and loss statement. Well, as usual, not much to talk about. Let me look at cost of purchase services. I was indicating we're using more freelancers and external providers than in the years before. A steep growth of 52% of cost of purchase services indicates this. When we then combine, this is the fourth bullet point on the right, our personnel expenses and all purchased services exclude restructuring, we have an unchanged percentage of 82% of revenue. We would have hoped this to increase more, but the strong pickup of purchased services was preventing that because they are somewhat more expensive than if we would have fully grown with own personnel expenses. Maybe also mention the other operating expenses. They are down 14%. One effect is FX. There's less FX on both sides on operating income and operating expenses, and there's less travel. Roughly 3 million less travel, of which 2 million would have been invoiced to clients, so a positive impact on the cost side of roughly 1 million, but here it looks like 3 million reduction. And then last but not least, income taxes stand at 27%, a far better profit loss distribution than last year. For the full year, we expect 25%. Here. Moving forward, cash flow on slide number 12. Well, our financing structure is solid as before. I think always the most interesting numbers are on the very right in the graph, the net cash position at the end of June 21, minus 16.3 million. So we're nearly down to zero, not yet. It's a 0.3 times EBITDA. So it's a very low debt that we carry, and therefore M&A would be possible if we find targets. Second point I would like to mention is operating cash flow, unchanged strong, 26.7 million euros, this time fully fueled by the good profitability. A year ago, the cash flow was quite similar, but there it was fueled by improved working capital. We did a lot of working capital management a year ago when the COVID crisis started, and our clients behaved very nicely. This has not changed, but it was not possible to improve the working capital further. So it's kind of the same cash flow, but different reasons. Last year, working capital effects. This year, it's the profitability. When we look at cash flow from financing, well, we simply pay back some loans because we want to reduce interest expenses. And last but not least, cash flow from investing activities. Now, there's no M&A inside this year, so it's purely our own investments. To retain our business. So as before, pretty low CapEx business. This is 1 or 2% of revenue going into investing activities. All right, moving to slide 13, another short one, balance sheet. Not really much to mention here. On the left side, the second bullet point indicates a decrease in non-current assets, which is mainly office lease. This IFRS 16 we often refer to, as we were able to reduce or terminate some of our rent contracts as our people are still heavily working from home, and we see this continuing, we have a positive effect here, and we were able to reduce those assets. What else? On the right side, let me mention equity ratio is up to 34%, well, mainly because of the good profitability. Moving to slide 14, employees, three informations. Let's start with the FTE number on the left. We saw a continuous growth trend on the employee side to 6,800 and a bit, mainly in Brazil, but we also see good growth in Poland and in Canada. So we are able to onboard people. Our utilization in the middle is very high, 91%, significantly above Q2 of last year. And as I said, while we carry the 91%, we are onboarding tremendous amounts of people. And onboarded people, usually they are not billable on day one, right? There is a bit of friction for training, for being ready to go and being staffed on projects. And despite that fact, we are at 91%. And last but not least, attrition on the right side is picking up. I think I said it last time. I will repeat it. 14% is our trailing 12 months. We believe it will be probably closer to 16 for the full year. So attrition is really back. Price inflation on salaries too. So our main challenge is managing the inflation and pushing it to our clients. We have another bullet point on the bottom, and we are naming the number of contractors. It is more than 1,000 at the moment. It was 620 last year. So you do see that on top of the FTEs that you see in the top left graph, we have a significant amount of freelancers on board to deliver the revenue we're showing. Moving forward, last slide, slide number 15, the outlook for 2021. These are already the new numbers. So on the revenue side, we now predict 550 million euros. Our last guidance was 520. We predict an EBITDA adjusted of 62 million euros. Last guidance before the upgrade was 56. And let's focus on EBT. EBT is now 36 million. Last guidance was 30. On the revenue side, we do see that the accelerated growth through COVID-19 and the catch-up effects goes on, and the digitization trends are also intact. On the sector side, and we will see that the client diversification continues, the share of Deutsche Bank will reduce, the banking share will probably continue to reduce while insurance and other industries grow. The revenue growth is heavily related to our fast-growing technologies, and let me name cloud just as one here because it really stands out. We could produce even more revenues if we would have more experienced, trained, and certified cloud experts. Problem is, you can't hire these people in the market. They really do not exist in big amounts, so you have to hire people and train them. So this is really a bottom-up effort. On the earnings side, we do see a disproportionate increase triggered by the growth on the revenue side. Therefore, well, of course, because of the exceptional items in the last year, the margin is heavily improving. If you take out the exceptional items, the margin is not taking a big step forward, just a smaller one. We'll focus again on revenue growth in the second half and continue spending on sales activities, technology expertise, and as I said, recruiting people to deliver to the market. For the full year, we are putting the pedal to the metal, to be honest, in terms of hiring. It's really hard to do more for any services organization. To go above 20 or 25% is kind of limiting because you suddenly start to promote as managers not only tier one and tier two people, but tier three people, and you have to manage your quality at the same time. And therefore, the guidance now given to the market is pretty much what we see for the year and what we can do for the year. We will talk about 2022 probably more in November because it will really pick up visibility after the summer period. But from today's perspective, all trends seem intact. Maybe the catch-up after COVID will be less, of course, but the digitization trend is ongoing, and therefore we're, from today's perspective, optimistic for the year 22. But again, let's wait for the summer period, and after that, the talks of our sales teams with the clients, and we will have more visibility on that. That's it for my presentation, and now ready to take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Please note, questions can only be asked via telephone and not via webcast. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchdown telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. The first question is from the line of Knut Hinkel from Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, Dr. Lutz. Thank you for taking my questions. I got five, actually covering a number of topics, so maybe we do them one by one just in order not to jump around too much. First of all, on the business with Deutsche, which was pretty strong in Q2. Compared to prior periods. So just to confirm, is that already the effect you expected from the collaboration between Deutsche Bank and Google, or is it something else that is there bringing up the revenues?
All right, let's do it your way. First of all, good morning. Yes and no. First of all, yes, collaboration with Google is helping us. We're seeing a slowdown in reduction in UK, although there was still a slowdown in the first half. Germany was even stable or slightly growing. And Spain, we expected to be lower, and it came in higher than expected. The Spanish Deutsche Bank account, which is quite big in GFT, will be going to India over time. And now it looks like it will take longer for Deutsche to do that, but in 22 it will more or less happen. Therefore, we are seeing a stronger Deutsche Bank continental European business than we initially expected. It will weaken a bit in the second half, and we will see another drop there in the year 22 of 10, 15 million. But all other Deutsche Bank clients seem to stabilize as of now.
So 10-15% for 22 is just Spain, or is it for the entire account?
10 to 15 million euros, okay. Only for Spain. The other clients in Deutsche we see stable for the year to come.
All right. Good. Then next question, the chip crisis. I know that you're not the big reseller of hardware. That's clear, but I can imagine that some of your clients are slowed down by the lack of chips and hardware at the end of the day. Do you see this effect, or that doesn't matter at all for you?
To be honest, well, we have 10% industrial clients, but overall it doesn't matter at all for us. We suffer a bit by ourselves, right? When you hire and onboard people, getting the laptops is also a drag these days. But to be honest, we manage, right? So we do manage. It is picking up laptops left, right, wherever you get them. But we're able, every new joiner gets a laptop, right? Nobody starts with an empty desk. And that's the main challenge, right? Which is good news. We don't have the challenges from the client side.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then a couple of housekeeping items. I remember you guiding for restructuring expenses as high as 3.5 million for the full year. Now the run rate is a little bit below after Q2. Is it still a valid estimate, or do you see less than 3.5 million?
Yeah, that was a restructure, you said, right? Restructure,
yes,
cost?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Currently, as stated on the slide number 3, I think it's 1.1 million so far. And to be honest, it will, and now we're down to normal restructuring. So the daily hygiene, same hygiene that you use, that just happens in a company. So I wouldn't be surprised if it would be below 2 million for the full year. That's the number we expect right now. So no longer 3.5 million.
All right, very good. And under utilization, I guess, seeing the graph that you presented is at nil euros for the full year.
Exactly. So, it's a zero. As I mentioned, in a steady state with, let's say, a low 1 percentage digit growth, utilization would look higher because we wouldn't be onboarding so many new people who are not fully utilized. It would probably be a percentage point higher. But in the current growth phase, it's 91%, and we're happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then a last question, good one for the CFO, I think. You're already at almost zero net debt after the first half of the year. And given that the outlook is very, very, very nice for the second half and for the next couple of years, I think I expect cash to pile up over time. So you already mentioned that you would go for acquisitions if there are opportunities. Maybe you can sort out a little bit the priorities you have with the cash in general. So do you have higher priorities for higher dividends or for acquisitions? So a little bit of guidance would be helpful here.
Yeah, on dividend, we have no plans for changing the strategy, which is pay out 20-40% of group net earnings. We would like to be in the middle, 30% would like to be the target number, which means there's still a lot of cash left. And yes, we would want to use it for continuous M&A as we have done before. Again, we would focus on the mid-sized targets, not the big targets, where you have a big investment at once, rather do two or three over a period of a year or 18 months and integrate them in different regions. We want to strengthen our insurance business. We want to strengthen especially our industry business and anything related to assets. But we are also ready to strengthen our banking arm in markets where we are not strong yet or where we do see technology expertise missing on our side and a target having it. So rather look at mid-sized deals, meaning revenues from 10 to 40 million euros, right? And then price targets would also be in that region, maybe 50 million as a max. So we're not overspending, rather going for different diversified M&A strategy. We have targets we're looking at, but currently nothing is really hot.
Some of your competitors complain a little bit about prices that have risen recently, and private equity was said to be back, but that doesn't hinder you from executing on your acquisition strategy.
No, it doesn't hinder us, but we do agree that we have seen some of the bidding processes out there going higher than we are ready to bid. And therefore, yeah, compared to the years before the COVID crisis, it looks like the multiples are up somewhat. But we're looking for the ones that still make sense to us.
Thanks a lot. That was from my side.
All right. More questions.
The next question is from the line of Sven Sauer from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the presentation. A few questions regarding four different topics. The first is regarding the working capital development for the remaining year. I remember there were previously some issues there. How do you see this for the remaining year? The second, or maybe we can go question by question, yeah. That would be probably better.
Yeah, well, we don't see an issue for the working capital, to be honest. We would see it going straight forward. We have a certain seasonality in our working capital. It's reducing, but it is still there. It's linked to how banks pay, and a lot of payments come at the end of the year. So usually we have our highest cash in January and then all the way into February. And therefore, we do see, as the previous questions already indicated, a net debt closing in on zero at the end of the year. Profitability and working capital should help that. So no, we don't see any working capital issues right now. Well, we do have growth, right? Which means there is a bit more working capital needed at the moment compared to a year ago, but no issues. We still have days out that are in line with where we want to be.
Okay, great. The next question is regarding Brazil. Why is there so much growth there in employees, and what kind of projects are these in Brazil?
Brazil is pretty much reflecting what GFT does overall. The projects are all over the place. It is a growing market right now, although from a distance we sometimes don't really believe it, right? So it's a growing market, especially on the banking side. They have been investing in digitization throughout the COVID pandemic, despite having very bad COVID numbers in Brazil, but especially the banks have not taken their foot off the pedal, and they were on full gas and they were spending. And that's why we're growing, right? We are a relevant player there. We're a trusted player. Everybody knows we are listed in Europe, so there's no wrongdoing possible from a GFT Brazil, which in Brazil sometimes is not always the case in independent companies. And we are hiring the people mostly for the Brazilian market. We want to extend again what we deliver to the US. It has come now become a bit small inside our Brazilian portfolio, but growth in Brazil is just strong. And it comes from banks all over. And in Brazil, we're mainly working for our banks, a bit insurance, a bit industry, but mainly for banks. And it is everything, right? It is from digitization of core banking processes, reworking the core banking of a major bank, or cloudification. So it's kind of the sweet spot of everything we are doing. And we have a big Salesforce practice in Brazil on top. So all those new technologies are picking up in that market as well.
Okay. The next question is regarding also what you just mentioned, the new technologies. I was wondering if you could share what the percentage was of these new technologies of the overall business in H1, and also how much of the external contractors and freelancers and how much of the own employees, percentage-wise, are used for these new technology projects.
Yeah. Well, we have guided for the year, and we're only giving the new tech numbers on a yearly basis. 50% will be in new technologies, and I believe we're well on track. Maybe it's a bit higher right now, right? So, therefore, it is driving the growth, especially as sales is one of the driving topics. Data is one of the driving topics. And freelancers, own employees, pretty much the same. As I said, you cannot hire people with cloud expertise and 3 years experience and being certified. So you don't even, and you also don't find them as freelancers. You have to breed them by yourself. So when we take on board freelancers, it's the same. It is like employees when we do that. Sometimes it is for certain expertise, but for cloud, this is not the case.
Okay, my last question is regarding also, of course, regarding the what you mentioned with the freelancers. I think last quarter or 2 quarters ago, you mentioned that the target, you have a target of 79% regarding the percentage of staff costs and purchase services to sales. Are you still holding on to this target now that you are seeing a higher share of freelancers who are, of course, then a bit more pricey?
Yeah, I think it wasn't really the target, but it was what we had in the past. So, of course, as usual, you would like to get back to good quotas you had in the past. But I believe currently in our current stage and setup and diversification in revenues across the globe, which has heavily changed to when we had 79%. In brackets, we had 60% top two clients revenue back then and not much business in Brazil or in Poland, brackets closed. And therefore, we're probably sticking above the 80%. It will be hard to go below. But as I also said, we have a higher share of freelancers. We have a lot of new hires. Getting it down to 80% is feasible. But again, it would then probably be linked to a slower growth rate on the top line. So there's no free lunch, right? There's always a price to pay. We can improve this quota, but then growth will probably be slower. Or the other way around, the quota is not that ideal, not that close to the 79%, but we're growing by 20%. And currently, we're taking the revenue side when we can pick. So we go for growth, and this will continue next year. So it will not improve very fast.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next question is from the line of Lukas Spang from Trigis Capital GmbH. Please go ahead.
Morgan.
Yes. Hi, good morning, Dr. Rutz. My first question is concerning the order backlog. You report this number so for the second time, so we don't have that much experience with it. But if I compare Q2 with Q1 and also do this for the last year, I'm wondering if there is maybe some seasonality in order backlog. Is this the case, or is there anything else for the reduced backlog in Q2 versus Q1?
Well spotted. Yes, there is seasonality. And as we are not reporting it for a long time, you're right, it is not easy to refer to that seasonality. The main reason is, especially in banks, we get a lot of contracts on a yearly basis. So it is like application management for the full year for a certain application is handed out in January for 12 months. In other words, the order book reduces somewhat every quarter. And this is the effect we're seeing, the seasonality effect, that for the first quarter of next year, the order book is not yet as strong because they are usually restarted, these projects, only in the fourth quarter for then the full year 22. And we will see the seasonality go on when we report Q3. I would assume Q3 will be below Q2, right? We will see an ongoing seasonality there, and it will then pick up again in the early 22 reporting. And therefore, you're right, let's wait for the seasonality and then we can more easily refer to that. We started the KPI knowing we don't have the seasonality, and so I can't prove what I'm saying right now, but trust me, we will come back to this next quarter.
And then in your presentation, you talked about the high onboarding costs. So do you have a feeling, or can you quantify this for the first half of the year, and what do you expect for the full year on this topic?
Yeah, we don't really quantify it, but when we were referring to the 82% overall cost versus revenue, it for sure cost us half a percentage point there, the onboarding, and this includes more people in recruiting than before, more payments to agencies than before, that would be in other operating expenses, so half a percentage point. Mm-hmm. But again, we're not really fully tracking that number. It is not something I can just take out of a report at GFT.
And this is only because you're hiring that much, or do you see this also in a general trend?
I know it's mainly because of the speed we're hiring at, right? We're growing by, how much is it? More than 20% for the full year. So we will be growing our people number by more than 20%, and that it's linked to that number, right? If it would only be 8, 9, 10% growth, we would have a normalized cost for onboarding. But at the same time, we would have an overall better efficiency and utilization in the team because less people would be brand new.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then last question on the restructuring topic. So if I got you right, you said 1.1 million restructuring costs so far.
Correct.
And not as much as you expected at the beginning of the year, but do you expect some further restructuring costs in the second half of the year?
Yes. As a company of our size with 6,800 people, you always have restructuring costs, right? Usually it used to be around 1 million. Now we have outgrown that number. It's somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million as a hygiene cost factor, which I would usually not even mention in this call, right? It's just something we have to endure. And we believe this is pretty much where we will end the year, between 1.5 and 2 million. So it's not exceptional anymore. It is a normal rotating some people out of the organization cost, that happens on a yearly basis.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from the line of Andreas Wolf from Warburg Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations on the quarter. Two questions from me. The first one is one relating to the topic we've just touched upon. So, as you are hiring faster, do you basically see the cost per employee going up, and can you pass cost per employee on to your clients? So what's the customer behavior here? And then you've mentioned that Deutsche is obviously moving parts of its IT from Spain to India. I think that is a behavior that you've observed among other clients as well, at least in the UK in the past, from Rule, for instance. So what does this imply for, let's say, building offshore, an offshore presence for GFT somewhere Thank you.
Let me start with the second question first. Well, they are transferring it to their own IT department in India. So it wouldn't even help if we would be present in India to support them from there. They're doing it into their own hub. And it's been planned for more than a year now. Again, due to COVID, it's probably been a bit slower than they had planned. But this is a very, very special decision. Deutsche wants to move this part of the business supporting the Spanish Deutsche Bank organization to India. I think we have seen this happen in all other markets, and it is quite mature. In Spain, Deutsche Bank is just doing it now, right? So it will happen once, and then it's done. But it is not a pattern we're seeing across the board. It's a very Deutsche-specific thing, as they want to push it to their own Indian IT hub. On the hiring side, well, yes, you're right. When you hire fast and the overall market is quite hot, usually you hire people on a bit higher cost level. However, when you hire people, you might hire lower levels than you initially planned for. And therefore, it is kind of balancing out. But yes, there is inflation in payroll these days. Absolutely. We see that. We have to manage it. We have to manage the client side. There's always a time gap between you have a pickup on the cost side in your salaries until you can move it to the clients. Usually you need a new negotiation round. When the prices are negotiated for a year, for example, we will only see it next year. If it's new projects, you can then do it with new projects. But for the running business, it's not easy to discuss price increases, although this is also happening these days because clients have the same issue, right? The IT people are not only more expensive for GFT. It happens to the clients just as well. And therefore, they know there is no escape over time. But there is a time lag, which we have to manage.
Great. Thank you. One quick follow-up, if I may. A few days ago, there was a regulatory body saying that they want to push the banks or to encourage banks to further move to the cloud. Do you see concrete initiatives here that might support your business in that field going forward? Thank you.
Yeah, I saw that too, right? And I thought, wow, taking into account that 2 years ago, nobody wanted the banks to go to the cloud in Europe for data protection reasons, and now we're pushing for it as the regulatory bodies. At least that has changed. Well, of course, within a week, nothing really happens, but we do see German banks starting or implementing their cloud strategy. Most prominent for us is Deutsche Bank going with Google, where we are doing business. We're doing a lot of lift and shift work for them already or planning to do. We see Commerzbank has a plan, but I don't know if they are spending yet. And we see the same happening all over Europe. And therefore, it's a trend which has started in the Anglo-Saxon markets 2-3 years ago. We have gotten our experience, right? We've done a lot of project and references, and we always said we're ready for it when Europe joins. And now Europe joins. And it's, to be honest, it's all about people, right? It's all about the number of people you have to serve those projects. The demand is really high, and it's not banks alone. Everybody goes to the cloud. It's insurance companies, it's industrial clients. Everybody has a cloud strategy of some sort. And therefore, fighting for people is currently what is really happening, and then you allocate to the projects.
Okay, great. Thank you for the insight.
Welcome. And more questions?
We have a follow-up question from the line of Knut Hinke from Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Just one follow-up on the new clients. You had a slide where you said, okay, Google is a new customer or is back as customer in industrial. Could you explain a little bit about the nature of the project? Does it have anything to do with Deutsche Bank? I guess no, because you put it into the client bucket and into the industry bucket. So maybe you can shed a light on that.
Yeah, I think most of the growth came from industrial clients, private equity clients working on cloudification in the US. Where we have a relevant Google practice, and this is one of the growth drivers. And therefore, that was something that stood out. Yes, we're working for Google with Google on Deutsche Bank, but this is not the driving force. The driving force is different, mainly smaller initiatives we're doing, like car builders in the U.S. and stuff like that. So it's industrial clients in the U.S. who are driving this growth.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome. So any questions left?
There are no more questions at this time. I hand back to Jochen Rötz for closing comments. Please go ahead.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for joining today in the middle of summer, and really have summer in Germany by now. We talk again in November after the Q3 numbers. If there are questions in between, feel free to contact us, investor relations, myself, ready to answer your questions. And I wish you, well, who was not on holiday, I wish you a great holiday. Everybody else, well, it won't be that busy in the office. That's good news, too. And hear you soon. Bye-bye, everybody. Cheers.